This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Patricia W. Fisher with Readers Entertainment Radio, and it is June 1st. And for a lot of you out there, it's the beginning of summer, or pretty close to it, or maybe you've been into summer for about a week, and you're looking for a really good book to read. Well, I have a fantastic author today that she will be telling us about her new book, her one of her anthologies she's part of, and projects to come. So let me get started. Love Inspired, an indie writer, Jolene Navarro knows about Texas. She's a seventh-generation Texan and a best-selling author. Jolene knows that as much as the world changes, people stay the same, good and evil, vow keepers and heartbreakers. And Jolene married a vow keeper for sure, who showed her that dancing in the rain never gets old. Jolene's life is much like her stories. It's filled with faith, family, laughter, and all of life's wonderful messiness. She's the mom of four children and loves large family gatherings and can handle just about any kind of family chaos. She loves to laugh. She's a fierce friend and a San Antonio romance author to boot. She uses her art degree to teach inner city kids about the world, and they teach her about life. Let's all welcome Jolene Navarro. Hello. How are you?
Hello. Thank you. I have not, that bio kind of took me off guard. It's like, oh, wow, yes, that's my bio.
That is your bio.
I don't know. I was like, wow, I'm busy.
You are busy. You know, we all sound so impressive when our bios are read. It's like, oh, wow, I do a lot of stuff, don't I? So, worth leaving the laundry on the couch.
Yeah, I would left a few dishes in the sink.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's kind of a normal thing. So tell me, let's just start at the very beginning. Tell me the very first romance you ever read.
Oh, that I ever read.
I
don't remember the title. It was the summer after my sixth grade. So summer, you know, just opens the time for reading. And I was hanging out with I have an aunt that's only about a year older than me. So I'd stay with my grandmother, and my aunt would hang out. And my older aunt, who was in high school, had these books under her bed. And we were bored, and everyone was gone. So we dug the books out and started reading them. And they were romance. And I guess I was in the sixth grade, so this was sometime in the 70s. And it was an eye-opener. I was like, oh, wow. And then I just started reading them from then on. I'm going to the library, trying to look for those covers. That's back when, you know, you had the Bata, you know, all this stuff. And then, of course, just over time, Jude Devereaux was probably the first one that I remember just falling in love with and getting every series, the Velvet series.
Right.
As soon as book came out, I was looking at it on the, you know, every time I'd go into the grocery store with my mom, I was looking, or in wherever we, where did we buy them back then? I guess Walmart. I can't remember now, but I remember looking for Jude Devereaux.
There was a place called Bookstop in Houston. Grew up in Houston, and we would go to Bookstop, which was like a small Barnes & Noble. And I remember that store a lot. I would love it. My dad's like, I'm going to the bookstore. I'd be like, oh, me, you know. let me go.
I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to remember because I would go and buy, I would save up because we had allowance, and that would be where I'd spend my allowances on those books. And of course, the library. And then I remember, and I think it was seventh grade, I tried to do a book report on one of them, and my teacher said no. I was like, but it's a historical. But yeah, so.
I know, that's nice. Well, I cannot tell you how many people I talk to that say they found books like from an older cousin or an aunt, or even a grandma or whatever, hiding under the bed, like a box of books under the bed.
I hear that. Yeah, I hear that a lot. The first Harlequin, you know, the little Harlequin series. And, that's, we always, you know, it's the women in our life that we get the love for romance books.
Right. So, and then when did you decide? You've been reading all these books. And then when did you decide to write a romance? What was the catalyst to make you go there?
That was probably, I was in my late 30s, and now it's been about 10 years, so I'm about to turn 50. And I just read and read, and I loved writing. And I played with children's books for a while, writing those, and I always loved, I kept journals. I've always wrote one way or the other. And but at that point, because I lost both my parents early, and one was 49 and one was 59, so I'm like, you know, and they always said pursue your passions and your dreams, and they were really strong advocates about that. So, but I'm also dyslexic, so I never thought that what I love doing is writing and telling stories, probably more than writing. I just like stories, ideas, story ideas. I'd tell myself a story in bed at night. I'd read a good book, and I would continue the stories in my head, which now we call fan fiction, right? So in my head, I was always doing fiction with Jude Devereaux's books or whoever I was reading. And I guess my kids were starting to get older. They were in high school now. I had four, like you said earlier. And I thought, I was going through a little, I don't know, changing my, looking at my life and seeing what I wanted to change. And I went back to school to get my master's. And I quit working at a job that was about 80 hours a week. I was a program director at the YMCA. And I have my four kids and my husband's too active. So I'm now working, now getting my master's degree, I actually had more time on my hand. And I was working overnight at Walmart. And I thought, I'm just going to start writing. I'm going to see what happens. And the first thing I did, I went online and I looked for writing groups. I had no idea how to start, you know, like, I just thought you magically sat down and you just start typing these wonderful stories because I had all these stories in my head. And, well, that's a lot harder. You know, in reality, it's like, oh my God. So, I went on the internet and I found this incredible group called SARA, San Antonio Romance Authors. And they were doing a workshop called, well, you were part of that. So when I say they, now it's you and me are both part of that now. they were doing a build a book, and I think Joni Hahn was organizing it, and Joanne Powers and Pamela Morrissey was there, and I was like, oh my God, these are people that actually have written a book that's been on the shelf, and that seemed, you know, I was kind of starstruck, and I'm like, and they were talking about how they did it, and then I joined, I joined SARA, and there was that online critique that they still do, the Carities, and you were a part of that. And I sent my first stuff in, and it's like, yeah, you know, POV. And I'm like, what's POV? And so I just learned that. And I probably spent about 3 or 4 years just being surrounded by writers who are really supportive and that were willing to share and help me grow and teach me gently the ways of the world when it comes to writing. So and just being a part of RWA itself opened up the doors to what the industry is about and how to get where I wanted to go. So
yeah,
that's,
I think
that's it, though.
That's huge because I think that a lot of people feel like, well, I don't need a writer's group. I know what I'm doing. And the thing is that there's so much to know and to learn, and it's changing daily sometimes.
Oh, well, now I think it's more important now than ever because as much as you have a dream, it's possible you can also – one of my things about being part of a writer group is that's a ripoff because people are there to take – they want to make a living off your dreams. And it can be really heartbreaking and disastrous. So being educated, of course, I'm a teacher too. So I'm being educated to me is always the key to be successful in anything. And that's just one way to do it is surround yourself by successful writers. Find them and hang on.
Right. And I think too, I remember we had a member in our group that she had been working so hard on a book. And we found out that they wanted her to pay $5,000 to print her book and put it out there. And I remember she was in tears because she really, really wanted her book published. And we all said, don't do that. And within a year, she found a new publisher and they've done so beautifully with her stuff. And she's won a ton of awards. So,
you don't.
Yeah.
People, I mean, if you're indie, that's the difference. You pay, you hire people. But if someone says you give us the money and, but we keep the rights, it doesn't work that
way.
Oh,
yeah, that was a big one, too. Yeah, it's very scary.
So I mean, you just don't know that.
Yeah, and you don't know that, right, and you don't know that when you're not part of a group that's helping you kind of bounce things off of each other. So you mentioned in your bio that you married a vow keeper.
Yes.
So what makes your husband a vow keeper?
He is, when
How
you're talking
you
about
know?
A man. Well, first of all, he comes from a family that when someone mentions the Navarros, it's a small town. Like, because I write small town, and the town, my Love Inspired, are all set in a town called Clearwater, which is pretty much Lakey, Texas, which my grandparents are from and my husband's from. And if you you ask anyone about the Navarros, they just have, as a family, they just have that reputation. But beyond the reputation, he's just, when he says he's going to do something, he does it. His integrity is maybe like, I don't know, it sounds like a cliche in a way, but he's really a man of integrity. And not just the way he treated me, but you saw the way he treats others, whether it's through his teaching and coaching or just how he interacts.
Right.
So that's huge when you watch how someone respects other people. And we've been together now for 30 years, and not once has he called me, even when he, and believe me, he's been angry at me, and sometimes justifiably so. But he's never responded to, like, calling me names, you know? It's always like, oh, he,
right.
You know, he's frustrated, but that's just how he treats people. I mean, he doesn't. So even after 30 years, he still is treating me with respect. And he's just, he keeps his, if he makes a promise, he keeps it. And he really gets frustrated because he doesn't understand a world that doesn't do that.
Right. Yeah, it can be quite frustrating for sure. And that's why you have Fred Day. Like, you have Tuesday,
yes,
that's Tuesday, and then you have Fred Day, which is Friday. So if you ever look at Jolene's website, if you ever look at Jolene's Facebook page, on Fridays, she always posts Fred Day, so we do a day for Fred there, and that's great because
yeah.
We can all say yay Fred.
I'm a huge Hugh Jackman fan. If anyone knows me, they know I love Hugh Jackman, and and I was posting pictures. Well, you know, we have another friend, Sasha, that has a Thor's Day because of, you know,
mm-hmm.
Thor, and I thought, well, that's really cute. So I came up with Hugh's Day, and I would share pictures of why I admire Hugh Jackman. Well, my husband
right.
one day made the comment, this is one of the moments when he's a little irritated with me. So he's like, oh, there's your boyfriend again. And I realized that that was his way of kind of like, eh. So I said, well, you know, I thought about it, Fred, which is perfect for Fred, Friday, right? So, but he's
right.
my real hero. He's my everyday in the trenches next to me, no matter what hero. And I tried to, you know, he's a fan, you know, he's a make-believe world. And I mean, he's a real
sure.
man, but that's a make-believe thing. And so I thought, well, if I'm going to, I don't know, post pictures of Hugh, I better post pictures of Fred too, because he's even more important in my life. So now he's starting
right.
at town. People go, oh, we're in town because we live in a small town. And they're like, oh, Hugh, you know, Fred Day. So he actually gets more likes and more comments than Hugh Jackman does. So I point that
wow.
out.
Wow.
Like,
well, you better
like,
not
oh,
let Hugh find
today.
Out.
No, I think he's fine. I would love for you to
funny.
Find out and actually pop up on Hugh's Day, but, you know, but I got Fred,
yeah.
so on Fred Day.
It's all good.
So that worked.
So with your love of reading and you got a teaching degree, what made you do, now you teach art and you're teaching at Inner
yeah.
City School in San Antonio. What made you teach art versus, say, English or history or anything else that was about storytelling?
Oh, that's funny. I'm sorry. I'm laughing. Anyone that teaches English, my husband's an English teacher. You would know why. As
okay.
a writer, I didn't recommend that you teach English because you are reading. Students work all the time, and most of them hate writing. So
okay.
You are – I mean, my husband spends all weekend reading these papers and making comments, and it's not – I mean, you've got some papers that are good, but they're still kids. Even the best of them aren't, you know, they're still, and you know, you have 100 students, 160 students, and you have to
right.
read all those papers. So it's draining. Whereas teaching art, it's another way to be creative. And I teach in a really small class environment. I'm in an alternative school where our goal
okay.
is to graduate. So we don't have sports and we don't have, actually, the only fine art they have is me, visual art. Everything else they do is on
okay.
a computer because it's an accelerated campus where they're self-paced. We have
okay.
a full-time child center where they, you know, they a lot of them bring their children, their families, they're working. We stay open until 8 o'clock at night so for the ones that work during the day can still come to school. And so not just the teaching art, but they're in here and we're just talking and they just amaze me. And I think teaching art, because it's painting and it's a different, it's drawing and it's a different creative resource. So
mm-hmm.
it, instead of draining me, it kind of feeds my creativity. I think if I had to grade,
okay.
if I had to grade papers, I think I would not want to write when I got home.
Right.
So does that make sense?
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So if
people, because if you reading and writing, you kind of think, oh, English. And I do have, my master's degree is a specialty in reading. I'm also qualified to teach. I mean, I'm certified to teach English. Don't tell anyone, but the art's different and don't want to do that. But like I help here with the English and it's just a whole different process. And I tell someone if they love reading and writing that teaching English actually might not be where you want to be if you plan on writing yourself, because if you're doing any other class, you can actually do different things. But with writing English, it has to be writing. You have to grade their writing. And if you just do the participation, then you're not really helping them. So it's in depth. It's like you're editing stuff all the time. And I don't know if you ever edit, but editing is a whole nother mind process. So I would steer away. If you actually want to be a creative writer, I would steer away from teaching English in schools, other than if you do creative writing. But even then, you're editing other people's stuff all the time. So when do you feel like, oh, now I can sit and write? I would think that it would be very draining. And some people do it. But I think Stephen King, who taught English before he sold Carrie, said that it sucked his soul dry, high school English did. So, most of the kids do not want to write. Oh, my gosh. Here they're like, Miss, please, let me do anything but write. I'm like, they're asking for 3 paragraphs. So do you realize I write 60,000 words? And they're like, how do you do that? I'm like, you have thoughts in your head. Just put them on paper. So,
perseverance, my friend. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to author Jolene Navarro talk about some of her teaching experiences. And I'm going to start asking her about her most recent project, which is an anthology. So tell me about it's Sweet Summer Nights, right?
Sweet Summer Nights. And it's got 6 stories and it's 99 cents. So that's always really fun because it gives you the opportunity for $1 to read several. Now we're all inspirational, so it's all sweet reads. We take each story's different. It comes from our different points of view, but so far it's gotten really great reviews and it's doing well. So and before this one we did Mistletoe Memories, and it was a Christmas anthology, and it did so well and received really good reviews. So we decided to do this again. So this is our second go around, except for Christmas. Now we're doing for the Sweet Summer Nights. So it's a great summer night read to get you through the summer.
So this is the same group of authors doing both, correct?
Yes, it's the exact same group of authors.
Tell me.
Oh, sorry. It's Danica Favorite, Jessica Keller, Leah Atwood, and Belle Calhoun. And Kristen Etheridge. Oh my gosh. Okay. I always see their names actually spelled. And so with me being dyslexic, I said, I don't think I've ever said their names out loud before. But anyway, that's who they are.
Well, you did great.
So if I mispronounce anyone's name, I am so sorry.
But you've got another book coming up in your Clearwater series.
Yes, that one comes out. It hits the bookstores like Walmart in July 17th. The ebook's available August the 1st. And that's actually going to be the first of a series in Clearwater. If you've ever read my Clearwater series, you've met the Bergman sisters that run a lumber yard. And there's Adrian, who's a single dad in town. And it's a story of basically has to do with adoption and single parents and messing up and, you know, secrets and all that kind of stuff, and letting the past go so that you can have a better future. So I write a lot about redemption stories and self-forgiveness along with forgiveness of others. And this one deals with all of that. So it was actually, I think to date, it's one of my, when I was writing it, cause it has 4 sisters. So when you have 2 sisters and my mom, she came from, there's 5 girls. So sister relationships are really fun, complicated, and, you know, there. So sometimes the sisters wanted to take over the story. I'm like, no, we need to get Adrian back in here. They're like, but we're talking. I'm like, y'all go talk somewhere else. So the sisters wanted to overtake the book. So I had to wrestle the sisters around, kind of like in real life. Not that Tracy and Mandy will listen to this. Because I'm the oldest of 3 girls, so I'm never telling them what to do. anything.
Never, never. But I think that, you know, it's interesting because I know that sometimes people feel like, well, it's inspirational. It's not going to, I mean, it's just a sweet romance and there won't be any conflict or anything. But inspirationals, you know, they can really dig a lot deeper into, like, inner turmoil sometimes.
Right.
Not just, like, am I worthy? Am I worthy in regard to my faith, you know? Because I think all of us struggle with that at some point in time, that we sit there and go, okay, why am I doing this? I'm not even, you know, this isn't even worth it. But I think it's also giving yourself permission to say, I messed up and I can start over. And that's kind of the beauty of inspirationals.
Yeah, because it's emotional crisis. I mean, all of my characters
right.
at one point or another are in a place where in this story, Nikki, the heroine, she at the beginning of the book, you kind of know that she has a past that she's hiding even from her family. And it's not giving anything away because I think it's in the first chapter. The hero doesn't know it. It's a secret to him. Mm-hmm. But she gave a child up for adoption when she was in high school. But she was so ashamed that she didn't want her dad to know or her sisters to know. So she went and moved in with her great aunt. The aunt took guardianship of her and took care of everything. So she's always been kind of on a self-destructive path because she couldn't go back home because of the secret. And it was the secret created this big gap between her and the people that she actually should have turned to.
Mm-hmm.
And she joins the and she becomes an extreme adventure guide in the Grand Canyon. And she's just crazy. And then she has to come home because she gets injured and she's actually
okay.
in a car wreck. So she has to come home and her whole goal is to leave as soon as possible because she wants to
sure.
avoid, like of us, you want to avoid the pain, you want to avoid the conflict, you want to avoid people disappointed, angry, all of those you know, you just want to avoid it. And so she has to come around and realize that the choices that she made were the best choices for her at the time. And then of course the hero is a single dad who gave up bull riding in order to raise his daughter. So
mm-hmm.
you know, the spark when he finds out that she gave a child up for adoption. So it shows
sure.
that all the choices that we have and that we make in life, and even if they, you know, how we come to terms with that. And everyone has different choices, and for different reasons they work out. And it's finding that
right.
acceptance, and that self-acceptance, as well as acceptance from others. So I love writing
right.
about it. Very emotional, and it's dealing with a lot of really internal angst that we have about ourselves. Struggling with, and you know, what's right, what's wrong, what's going on, what do I need to do? Is this my purpose? Is this where I'm supposed to be? Is this the plan that I'm supposed to be doing, or have I screwed up the whole thing?
Right.
And do that. And I like to throw kids into the mix, and so that always makes it. I think it raises the stakes. Some people say, "Oh, kids are cute." For me, because I'm the mother of four, as a preschool teacher, and now I teach high school kids inner city, and kids raise the stake because you have someone else's life. Their well-being on the line when you're responsible for them. So
right.
anyway, that is.
And do you
yay.
Feel, were you inspired by, I mean, I know you can't, even if you had a specific person in mind, but did this story come to you because of some of the students you have? Or was this something that you'd been playing with for a while, this kind of situation?
I do stories. I have a homeless in one of the books, Texas Christmas Wish, and it's a homeless girl
mm-hmm.
that was a single mom, and that was definitely inspired by one of my students who was working really hard to make her life better for her child, and her
mm-hmm.
background was so overwhelming. I'm like blown away by what they try to overcome and what they're overcoming. But this one was actually, I have friends, and a lot of us know about people that adopt children, and you see children in foster care that need adoption, but
mm-hmm.
sometimes I don't think the story gets told about the mom that gave up a child for adoption. And it's not
right.
always a negative thing, right? Because I know we deal with CPS coming in and taking children out of homes, but you also have moms for whatever reason decide that giving a child up at birth is the choice. So I wanted to deal with that and show that that's
right.
another choice that, and a lot of times people don't talk about that a lot. And I wanted to get it right. And I have some friends in that situation on both sides, where some family took in adopted a child from a cousin from the situation, and some friends that went through the adoption end of it. So I wanted to
mm-hmm.
explore both sides, the parent who gave up everything as a 17-year-old to raise their child, and the parent that thought it would be better to give their child another life with another family. And both choices were right.
Right. Exactly, because it's interesting to talk to different people about it, and they'll say, well, I don't understand how someone can. It's like, you know, some people just know that they're not the right person for that time. Now, in 10 years, maybe they're the right person, but for that child at that moment, that's not where that child needs to be in the best place possible. So
right.
I think it's actually quite a selfless thing to do to realize that, you know, this child can have better, and I think that
right.
that's where they need to go.
Because with yeah. inspirational, a lot of times a Bible verse, and this one isn't so much a Bible verse, but the Bible story that we've all heard, or most of us have heard of with the mother, the two women that come to the king, right? And they hit the king,
right.
famous for his wisdom. And
yeah.
he's decided he's going to cut the child in half. So he knows the real mother because she steps up and she's willing to give the child away in order to protect the child. And
right.
that was the inspiration. Sometimes the best thing a mother's love can do is to put a child in a better situation, not necessarily to keep the child. So that was
right.
the inspiration behind the story.
Wow. I mean, I was talking to some friends over the past couple of weeks and saying that a lot of times I think, you know, people kind of poo-poo romance novels because, you know, it's romance, but, and they kind of roll their eyes, but, you know, reading the wide variety of books that are available, we really tackle some heavy subjects, whether it's in inspirational or paranormal or whatever. You know, the subject of finding family and how you get there, it's a repeated thing, and then the struggle you go through to get there is a big deal. And that's what's so great about the romance genres. You know, the happily ever after is there, but the journey to get there is always what I think bonds people together.
I think what's important about the romance and the what they're writing now, what we are writing now, isn't so much that I found love and it solves my problem. It's I find out who I am, and then I'm able to love someone completely. But first they
right.
have to know who they are. And it's not the other person that comes in and saves them. It's us being able to stay, this is who I am, and finding my true essence and not living. Because I love starting a character off that believes the identity that the world says. You are a bad guy. You've been in prison. You're just going to end up on the streets again. And that's what the world tells him. But his essence is so much more than that. And through the journey of finding out who he is, then he's able to love the heroine completely. So I'm
exactly.
I just turned in my today, and that's the story that. So I'm like, that one's but that won't come out in January. So we're not going to talk about that one. But yeah, that's why I just finished edits on that one. Yeah, it's finding that, and I think all of us, you know, the world, whether it's our parents or school or, you know, we have these voices that tell us who we are and what we're good at, what we're bad at, what, you know, why are we even doing that? And these are the world telling us, but then who are we really? And we have to be able to get down into our core and find out who we are. And then we can love people completely. We can give other people because we've filled our own well. And to me, that's what romance is about. You
right.
know, love is a great thing, but it's not the superficial love, but like, oh, you know. And I think any romance, any genre, any heat level, whether it's erotic or inspirational, I think when it really connects with readers, it's because a person is finding out who they are through that journey of falling in love, too.
Exactly. And it's fun to just watch it. It's like I don't think there's anything that's more wonderful to see than, you know, them figure out that they are good people and good for each other. So, and that's always
all,
a good thing.
Right? Yeah, we all
yeah.
want that. We all want to know who
we
are and to be able to find a person that connects with us. So
tell me again, the name of your book that's coming out July 17th is?
That is Texas Daddy.
Texas
Isn't
Daddy.
Isn't that a fun title?
Okay. Yeah.
You can't say it that way. It's inspirational. Because for a long time, I'm like, Texas
that's right.
Daddy. I'm like, wait, no. It's Texas Daddy. I know. I told my editor, I'm like, the vibe. She's like, oh no, we love it. I'm like, okay. So Texas Daddy. Actually,
okay.
at the beginning of July, I have my first historical coming out. It's been a busy
okay.
year. So I actually wrote, I think, 4 books this last year, and they're all coming out
wow.
this summer, it seems like.
We have about 45 seconds left. So all that, that's all on your website as well, right?
Yes. I think so.
Okay.
I need to probably update my site. I've been really busy at the end of the school year. But, yeah, we have The Sweet Summer Nights. It's the anthology for 99 cents. That's available now. And
right.
I'd go out and get that. If you've never read Inspirational, this is actually really good. These are two of the all of us have had really a lot of success. So I think you'll get a really good sampling of what Inspirationals are about. and that Sweet Summer Nights. And then July, my historical Lone Star Bride comes out about a girl goes in disguise on a cattle drive. And then Texas Daddy, which I absolutely love this book. That one comes out mid-July.
Perfect. Well, that was Jolene Navarro. And check out her website at jolenenavarrowriter.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions. www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.